Amen.
Welcome to the November 14th edition of the Internet Show. This is your host, Slip Mode.
And VR.
VR in the house, as usual. Yeah. Well, we've got a good show for you tonight.
Yeah, I'm feeling a little nonchalantly spunky.
Nonchalantly spunky?
That's right.
All right. And on top of it, I got to say sorry that we get these shows up here a little bit later due to schedule conflicts and stuff like that. Sometimes it takes a little bit to get these shows up. But they're all going to be up, and we're still going to make up the, I think it's episode 57. But we'll be making that up pretty soon. So what's going on new with you, Vier?
Just battling my way through the day against the man.
You know, I got an email from someone in Sydney, Australia, confirming your comments about how the voting system works over there.
Right on. That's always nice to have some validation that
from Nick Hotfoot,
that whatever comes out of my mouth is not a complete
fallacy.
Yeah,
and has some credibility.
Exactly.
All right. Yeah. So, man. Yeah. Shout out to Nick Hotfoot. That's
yeah.
Great. We have a listener out there and
cool. It's always good to know that we're making an impact down the down under.
The down under. Actually, it's episode 56. I just checked it out. Okay. Well, we got a lot of news here. Gray Area was going to be on the show, but wasn't able to make it. But he'll be back on the show in the future.
Good, good.
And, you know, going to pimp hackermedia.net. Go there and check that out. That's a great resource to find out all the different things that are going on in the hacker media world, including the
hacker
show.
Hacker culture.
Yeah, we'll be posting our show up there as they come out, and as well as other people will be posting all the other shows that are available and events and whatever else is interesting. So go ahead and check that out. Also, let's see. Yeah, I think that's about it. All right, let's jump into our first story here, which is a very common one that we talked about before, but it's a little different take on it. Basically, taking cue from the recording companies, Hollywood movie studios are preparing to file copyright infringement lawsuits against computer users, it says, are illegally distributing movies online. Basically, you know, now the movie studios are going, not just the recording industry, but the movie studios. Lawsuits will target movie fans who share digitized versions of films over peer-to-peer networks, with the first wave of litigation planned as early as Tuesday, which is earlier this month.
Wow.
Oh, Thursday, sorry. According to the source, like the recording industry, which began suing individual music file shares last year, the movie studios plan an ongoing litigation campaign. The movie, the Motion Picture Association of America, which represents the major film studios, declined to comment, but the organization issued a release saying its chief executive would be making another major announcement regarding illegal file sharing of motion pictures on peer-to-peer networks.
Yeah, I didn't think the recording industry was very successful in their suing attempts.
Yeah, it kind of makes people think, like, hey, you can download movies, dude? How do I do that?
Yeah.
You know, it's
actually, there's going to be a big old spike in it. Like, you know, and then they're going to sue a bunch of people, and then it's going to decrease for a little while. And then there's going to even be an even bigger spike in the amount of movies that are transferred.
I forget what the stat was, but they said something like 18% of the Internet's traffic is BitTorrents, which is a way of, you know, transmitting files back and forth and stuff like that. All right, movie studios were still finalizing how many lawsuits would make up their initial filing. They're like, yeah, what should we do? But it'll probably be around 200 or so. The MPAA claims the U.S. movie industry loses more than $3 billion annually in potential global revenue because of physical piracy or bogus copies of videos and DVDs of its films.
Yeah, but yeah, that's what's really strange. It's $3 billion potential. They didn't really think about it. Is the people that are actually sharing that and, you know, and watching them, that they're really just who's actually getting that $3 billion in loss is actually Blockbuster. Okay, they're not people that are going to buy it. They're not people that are going to see it in the theater. Those are people that don't want to rent it. They just want to see it once, maybe twice, and then be done with it. And screw going down to the Blockbuster down on the corner. You know, you have to, you know, actually get dressed, get in your car, drive down there. You know, look through the cornucopia of movies that are there.
And it just takes too long.
Yeah, when you can just go on your computer, you know, the first thing that pops up on your screen from the, you know, shared network, oh, yeah, I'll watch that movie. Click.
You know, it's funny. I don't directly, like, go and download movies or anything like that, but I go to friends' places where they just have the movie, and I'm like, I don't want to rent it. I don't want to see it in the movie theater. I don't want to buy it. I'll just wait until somebody has it, you know. I have a few friends that download movies, and I'll just go see it over there.
So yeah.
See, that's, like, my laziness right there, you know.
Yeah, see, they're suing, you know, the movie mooches anyway. So they're not they aren't going to spend the money in the first place, so.
Yeah, you know, it's just because they have the, I don't know.
It's just because the option's there that they go, all right, no, I'll do it.
Let's see. As the recording industry has, movie studios have tried to shut down companies behind fostering software through litigation with little success. The movie industry also tried to battle piracy by running ads in movie theaters and elsewhere designed to dissuade people from file sharing films by stressing the risks of identity theft.
We'll see there.
Identity theft and liability? How is it a risk of identity theft? That's poorly printed.
But yeah, right there, you already see that they don't have a really good concept of reality here. That they're wanting, that they're advertising in theaters where people who are willing to pay and want to pay for the, because you don't really go to a movie theater just for the movie, because you can go home and rent it.
I just do it to take some chick out or something like that. It's like a precursor thing.
Well, you go there for the whole experience. You get the big movie screen. Yeah. You got the incredible sound system. You got the semi-comfortable seat. And you don't have to clean up after yourself if you spill some popcorn. So, you know, like it, you have to at home. So really, you're going there for the whole service and the atmosphere of the movie experience. If you just want to see the movie, you're going to rent it. That's if you're willing to pay for it.
Yeah, I'm so lazy. I won't go to the store just so many times. Like, yeah. I want to see this movie or I want to go watch this. And I'm like, I don't go to rent it. I don't go to see it. And I end up like watching films like later, like years later after they come out because somebody has it, you know. And that's when I, hey, can I borrow that? And that's it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, because you, like, I have a problem with going to see movies and why I don't, I know, like, I,
so freaking one, expensive.
Once every like 6 months I go to a movie theater to see a movie. It's because I am subject to their time. They're going to play their movie when they have it scheduled. Yeah, in my life, that really works out well, let me tell you.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I want to see a movie. Well, I've either got to wait 2 hours, or I've got to break like 5 traffic laws to get there in time.
Do you know what they need, VR?
What's that?
24-hour pizza joints.
I've always wanted a 24-hour Chinese takeout place.
Yeah, that too.
Like, there are so many nights where I'm, like, up at 3 a.m. and go, man, some, like, Kung Pao chicken would go real good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sitting here, and I don't even want to make freaking food. So, but at this point, studios have stopped short of taking legal action against individuals. So, I don't know. Just whatever. Don't download Yeah.
You know, it's all a calculated risk of, you know, of if 18%
just
of
don't
the
download 18 movies a day, okay? You might yeah. tick someone off.
Like if 18% of the internet traffic is, you know, is down.
That's not an exact stat, but it's astronomical. Like, yeah, it's wow.
Well, it sounds reasonable. Really does. So, what are the real chances if they're only going to, you know, essentially sue 200? You know, so you're all actually obligated to get sued for the greater whole, for the greater good. Go out, download as many movies as you possibly can, and burn them and share them with your friends. Make it worth your while.
Yeah, set up neighborhood movie distribution centers.
That's right. Show the movie industry what damage could be done with when anybody's just slightly motivated to get their money's worth out of their free movies of the potential risk. So if you're going to be sued for, you know, like $400,000 for a couple of movies, make it worth your while.
Yeah, make it, yeah. Get something out of it.
That's right.
Other than seeing.
You know, make some friends, influence people. It's all good.
Okay. Moving right along here.
Oh, yeah, this is moving fast tonight.
You think so?
I'm being sarcastic.
Oh, yeah, it could take 10 minutes on that. All right, well, oh, yeah. Here, you know what, in the middle of the show here. Go to themindwar.com. It's Decoder's new show, and actually it was on episode 4. I think their test pilot thing, they haven't gone. It's going to be a daily show.
Oh, my.
That's crazy. We look like punks compared to that.
Yeah. Well, they're, you know, the
commitment. I could do a weekly show, but it's just tough. It's damn scary.
Well, the commitment on that is just
insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did one of those shows. So the MindWar.com Decoder is known as, doing default radio. So he's doing that. And Doug's on there, too, doing the recording. So. Doug's a pimp, and
dude, the research that's got to go be involved in that.
Well, Decoder stays home a lot because he has to, because of a certain court thing. But yeah.
Oh, but the ankle thing. Does he have the ankle thing?
No, I don't. No, he doesn't.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he does. No.
All right. That's probably too much.
So check that out, themindwar.com. Okay. Well, now moving right along here, NASA's X-43A to attempt Mach 10 flight. Next week. The good thing is that we're recording a little bit later, so we know the results.
Oh yeah, makes us look like we're gods.
We're
we know
in
the
beyond. So,
that's right.
All right. Basically, it's just a hypersonic ship that runs off an ion motor.
Does it explain what like an ion motor how it works?
No, not really.
Oh, Troy.
But
it's great.
Yeah, you can. We've talked about it once before. First flight attempt in June 2001 failed when the booster rocket went out of control.
Oops.
And the full stack booster rocket and X-43A combination was destroyed by ground controllers. The second attempt on March 7th and March 2000.
I take it then it was an unmanned.
Oh yeah, it's all unmanned. Yeah, but when it's done, they just plummet it.
Yeah, because I don't think the human body can stand Mach 10.
No. The second attempt at Mach 7 in March 2004 was highly successful. The final flight of NASA's X-43 hypersonic research aircraft is scheduled to occur on Monday, November 15th. Basically, this show is supposed to be done on the 14th, so we know the answer now. Weather permitting. Actually, they end up doing it Tuesday, so now you're finding out how late the show is. The mission is intended to flight validate the operation of the X-43A supersonic combustible ramjet or Ooh. Scramjet engine. Oh, it's a scramjet. Yeah, it's not an ion. Sorry. Anyways, at...
I still don't know what an ion... You know, like an ion engine. That just sounds, you know, like almost like a warp field engine to me now.
Oh, no. It's different. It's a different... It doesn't... It's like these ion particles it shoots out or whatever.
It sounds very chemical.
Yeah, it's different. And it's actually, like, more efficient.
If it is, yeah, if it's breaking down stuff at the molecular level, I would.
Or maybe this is, I remember.
No, it'd be at the, it would actually be almost at the atomic level.
At engines at a record speed of almost Mach 10 or 10 times the speed of sound, readying the X-43A at its modified Pegasus booster rocket to the B-52B launch aircraft scheduled for Thursday. So what they do is they fly this B-52 up and then launch off of that.
Yeah.
Glide and then launch. Takeoff is tentatively scheduled for about 1 p.m. Yada, 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 off the coast of Southern California. As with the first two flights, the third X-43A will be carried aloft the NASA's B-52B launch aircraft from NASA's Dryden Flight Research Center on Edwards Air Force Base. The B-52B mothership will release the combined X-43A and Pegasus booster stack at 40,000 feet altitude off the coast of Southern California. The booster will then accelerate the experimental vehicle to nearly Mach 10, or almost 7,000 miles per hour.
Wow.
Man, I don't know how that just is able to even stay in control. At approximately 1,100 feet altitude, at booster burnout, the 2,800-pound wedge-shaped X-43A will separate and fly briefly on a pre-programmed path, performing a set of tasks and maneuvers before splashdown in the ocean. Basically, what they want to do is have these vehicles launch off these like B-52s and go whoosh, and go into space.
Yep.
Then be able to maneuver right there, and it's cheaper.
Well, let's see. If it's going at 7,000 miles per hour,
yeah, it's gonna get there pretty fast.
That it would take, okay, about 3 hours to get clear around the Earth at about the longitude that they're shooting off at California.
Yeah.
3 hours to get around the entire Earth.
Oh.
Imagine that.
Here we go. Ramjet operates by subsonic combustion of fuel in a stream of air compressed by the forward speed of the aircraft itself.
Okay, so it's like
as opposed to a normal jet engine in which a compressor section, the turning page here, the fan blades compresses the air. Ramjets operate about Mach 3 to Mach 6. A scramjet is a supersonic combustion ramjet, is a ramjet engine in which the airflow through the whole engine remains supersonic. It is through. It is thought that a scramjet can operate from Mach 5 to 6 and up to at least Mach 15. The highest speed attained by a rocket-powered airplane was NASA's X-15 aircraft, which was Mach 6.7. Well, this one made it to Mach 10, so...
Right on.
It did it. And
what's really nifty about... let me add a little something about... really neat stuff about subsonic and supersonic airflows. Okay, like subsonic is if you constrict it, it speeds up. It's kind of like when you, it's kind of like with water. If you put your thumb over the end of the hose, it gets faster. Well, supersonic actually does the opposite. So if you constrict it, it slows down, and then when you release it, it speeds up. So to do that transition requires two completely different things, and that's more than likely why they have the two engines on this and call it a stack. The one is to get them up to, one's for below, subsonic, and one's for supersonic.
Like I was reading, I don't know if it had to do with this or what. I was reading something and I'm confusing this data in my head from all these different things I've read. Could you have an engine that like took the air as it was sucking the air in and uses that as its own method of combustion and producing fuel? Is the air just up there in the sky?
Well, like that's what a ramjet does.
That's what I'm thinking.
Is as the faster it goes,
something must like.
Well, that's the thing.
Something starts the blades, I think, and then once it's up there, that's just just making it go more and more and more because it's taking the oxygen, just burning it up. And
well, that's what it's doing is the faster the air goes in, the faster it can go.
Yeah, they must make the bearings on that thing must be like crafted to a T. It keeps something spinning at that.
Oh, yeah, those RPMs is just amazing.
That's wow. All right. Well, we kind of talked about this before. There was a group of people called the SCC, Source Code Club, who got a hold of Cisco Pix Source Code and was like distributing out in the net. Actually, they showed some of it and said something like they'll distribute it or sell it or something like that. Well, Nosh Group of Hackers has surfaced on the internet once again, the Source Code Club. This time the SEC is selling source code for a Cisco security application. Another blatant violation of copyright regulations. The Notorious Mystery Source Code Club has reemerged, this time selling source code for Cisco security application. And, this is for the security application. Before it was the Pix firewall. In another blatant violation of copyright regulations, believed to be an anonymous collection of hackers, the SEC this week announced in a posting on a group website that is offering the complete Cisco Pix 6.3.1 source code for $24,000 U.S. money. Cisco Pix is a firewall application providing security. Okay, well, is there router software? Now it's this and the Cisco security application. Providing application security, or firewall application providing security, intrusion protection, network monitoring, and other services for business and carrier networks. The package being offered includes all sources and make files to create Pix images. With the ubiquity of Pix devices these days, we see a huge market for such code. Many intelligence agencies and government organizations will want to know if those ones and zeros in the Pix image are really doing what was advertised. SEC says in this posting, you must ask yourself how well you trust the Pix images you download to your application or to your appliance from Cisco.com. In July, SEC held set up shop in a similar online discussion group using an address in Ukraine offering Intrusys Dragon Intrusion Defense System source code for some $19,000, as well as Napster file sharing software code for $12,000. Users of the Cisco Pix applications have little to worry about. Russ Cooper of security firm, yada, yada, yada. They give too much props to people. Possessing the source code rarely makes it significantly easy for hackers to exploit software vulnerabilities. He noticed it's hard to tell if this is a legitimate organization, but you would have to be stupid to buy what they're offering at that price. Who knows if they have the actual code? There is no reason to believe that they have anything of value. Cisco is also victimized earlier this year by hackers who stole source code from the firm's InterNetwork operating system iOS software. In May, iOS code files were listed on Russian website. You know, the... Okay, so there's a few things going on here. One of the things is that this guy is trying to say... Who knows if it's real or not? Second thing is...
Yeah, that, which is a legitimate, like, thought there.
Yeah. And another thing I'm trying to say is, well, if you get it... Another thing you need to think about is if you get this code, you don't know if they modified it and put something in there. And then also...
Well, if you do get it, what's it really going to help you do anything that you couldn't reverse engineer anyway?
Well, some stuff... you know, this makes it a lot easier. Yeah, there's some reverse engineering, but it takes much longer than just looking at the code. And I don't believe that it says that, you know, rarely makes it significantly easy for hackers to exploit software vulnerabilities. Well, I mean, it does if somebody, you know, looks at it and pores over it. It really does allow them to look for vulnerabilities a lot easier than reverse engineering stuff and, you know, throwing 1,000 things at it to figure out, does this really do that? Or just like, reading it and says if it really does that. And then one thing here, it says that... the SEC says, you must ask yourself how well you trust the Pix images you download to your appliance from Cisco.com. So does that mean it's kind of a political thing in saying that, well, since it's closed source, we're going to supply the open source for you, for your benefit, to see if you can trust it, you know? And that's kind of a new statement that
yeah.
I think is being said with that. But so... I guess.
Yeah, because Cisco, you know, they're actually just a den for Al-Qaeda, you know, IT terrorist activity.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they've developed this whole thing so they can, whenever you download a pic off the internet, it actually, like, incorporates
it actually
something.
Emails George W. Bush.
Yeah, and then, so it's going to clog up the whole White House, you know.
And then George is going to send somebody to your house and...
Yeah, and then he's going to get ticked off and, like, bomb another country.
Yeah, or, you know, just, like, I don't know, wipe out the Cisco industry.
Well, that could be because they'll be terrorists, and so
yeah.
They'll be violating the Patriot Act. Well, that's un-American.
So, all right, but, yeah, there's a few things going on with that article, but, yeah, that's...
Yeah, but that's a good article.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that they're offering that. I wouldn't give anybody money for that, unless you're a millionaire. Like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever.
Oh, yeah, this code is suspect, and I don't even know if it's right or not, but and what help it could be to me, I don't know, but you know, I'll give you money for it.
Yeah, you know, if they are making the statement of, like, hey, you need to be aware of, if I'm reading that correctly, of what this code is that you're using, so we're going to give you the source of it. They should give it to the love of the community and just put it out there for free.
Yeah, exactly. So, if they're really that, you know, if goodwill is their only intent.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out exactly what they meant by that statement that they had. Underwater robot makes history crossing the Gulf Stream.
Ooh.
Yeah, like the sailing vessel used by Captain Joshua Slocum to sail solo around the world 100 years ago. Another ocean-going vehicle is making history. A small ocean glider named Spray is the first autonomous underwater vehicle, or AUV, to cross the Gulf Stream underwater, proving the viability of self-propelled gliders for long-distance scientific missions and opening new possibilities for studies of the ocean. They say gliders, but it goes underwater.
It's a water glider.
Yeah. Launched September 11, 2004, about 100 miles south of Nantucket Island, Massachusetts, the 2-meter long and about 6 feet orange glider with a 4-foot wingspan looks like a model airplane with no visible moving parts. It's been slowly making its way towards Bermuda, some 600 miles to the south of Cape Cod, at about 1/2 knot, roughly half a mile an hour or 12 miles per day. Measuring various properties of the ocean as it glides up to the surface and then glides back down to 1,000 meters depth, or 3,300 feet, three times a day. Scientists recovered the vehicle this week, week of the show, north of Bermuda. So every several hours, Spray spends about 15 minutes on the surface to relay its position and information about ocean conditions such as temperature, salinity, and pressure via satellite back to Woods Hole, Massachusetts, and San Diego, California, where scientist Beck Owens from Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution and Russ Davis and Jeff Sherman of Scripps Institution of Oceanography at the University of California. Man, I'd hate to have to, like, say where I worked every day.
You just use the acronym.
Yeah, track its progress, it has been an adventure-like voyage. After two false starts this summer, when malfunctioning equipment cut earlier missions short, and scientists had to recover the vehicle after a few days at sea, the 112-pound glider was launched, with fingers crossed, in September from the research vessel Cape Hatteras. It's been exciting to say the least, Owen says. We have just completed a track across the Gulf Stream and proved we can use gliders to monitor circulation patterns and major currents. Spray has a range of 6,000 kilometers, or about 3,500 miles, which means it could potentially cross the Atlantic Ocean and other ocean basins. Nikisa Davis is a Spray can stay at sea for months at relatively low cost, allowing us to observe large-scale changes under the ocean surface that might otherwise go unobserved. For the next mission in early 2005, the glider will make a round trip between Woods Hole, Massachusetts, and Bermuda. For future missions, it will also be equipped with an acoustic Doppler or a Doppler current profiler to give vertical profiles of current speed and velocity. In the not-too-distant future, Owens and Davis expect that the gliders will be equipped with an entire suit of sensors that indicate the pressure of dissolving oxygen, carbon dioxide, alkalinity, and nutrients in the water. The idea for developing the robot glider like Spray that could travel in the ocean gathering data over long periods came 15 years ago from the late Henry Stommel, a scientist at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, known for his contributions to understanding the dynamics of ocean currents, especially the Gulf Stream. Stommel honored the first man to sail around the world alone, Joshua Slocum, by naming his idea the Slocum Mission. Slocum departed Boston on April 24, 1895, on his 3-year circumnavigation in Spray, a sloop he rebuilt himself. The new underwater glider is called Spray to show its lineage to Stommel's idea and Slocum's brave voyage.
Huh. What a neat thing. Like, I just the whole idea of actually a water glider, that it's almost perpetual. that it can travel for, what is it, 3,000, 6,000 miles?
3,300 miles.
Yeah, it's 3,000 miles with no moving parts.
Well, it has to have moving parts, right?
Well, maybe, I don't know, but, like, the whole idea is rather fascinating.
Yeah, it's really something propels it, I'm sure. That's got to be.
Well, a glider, what, like, an airplane glider is, they just have the controls. There's no motor. There's no prop. Yeah, it's just, it gets towed up to a certain altitude.
Yeah, but you can steer it.
Yeah, and so it's just, and especially being self-guided, that it has to understand of, like, how, like, ocean currents.
And it has some buoyancy because it goes down and up.
Well, yeah, it's got to have actually some, like, I forget the control names for, to make it go up and down, like how a plane does. But, that it's got to use the currents to give itself some extra momentum. Otherwise, it just kind of fizzles out. The lower, as it goes down, it picks up speed, and then it goes up. But without any extra force, it never gets up quite as high as it did initially. So, for it to do that three times a day is pretty amazing. For it to be able to pick up enough speed to get all the way back up to the surface again to transmit its data.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think there's some sort of form of propulsion on there. I'm not sure.
I don't think so. Otherwise, they wouldn't call it a glider.
Well,
they seem pretty technical.
Yeah.
So they would have another term for it.
Moving on, the SCO Group enters into a new agreement with its lawyers. Basically, it gives them a top out cost, capping cost of legal fees. And because they're going nowhere with all this money they spent. SCO Group said that it signed an agreement with its attorneys to limit cash expenditures in litigation with several corporations, including IBM. Under the agreement, the software company required cash expenditures to pursue the litigation is capped at $31 million until the IBM matter is resolved. The company said in a filing to the Securities and Exchange Commission the agreement governs SCO's group relationship with their attorneys, Boy Schiller and Flexner LLP, Kevin McBride and Berger Singerman, in connection with their representation of the company in litigation with IBM, Novell, Red Hat, AutoZone, Chrysler. SCO Group said it's paid its attorneys roughly $12.6 million under the agreement for outstanding legal fees and expenses. For future legal fees, the company is to pay a total of $12 million plus contingency fees, it said. So, a lot of money spent. Have they really made that much money in return?
No.
I don't think so. All right. And you don't really hear much about, better get your Linux license. Be careful. That hoopla lasted for so long.
Oh, yeah. That probably raked them in, at least $36 million.
You think?
No. I really doubt that.
Yeah.
Really doubt it.
Yeah. Those guys suck. And
that's just the last of the Microsoft money.
It's this transitional phase where the industry is learning that you can have to deal with open source and crap, getting free movies and getting free songs and getting free software and a lot of people they're producing a lot of crap on top of that,
Wow.
Getting it, mostly with the software you don't produce much from watching movies. But maybe it inspires creativity.
And of course probably a lot of like the Pixar stuff that they use to generate their movies.
Gives people a good day, it's a good movie. I mean
probably came from there's some of those that probably some of that code. It might have come from the open source community.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
A lot of it runs off Linux workstations.
There you go. So it contributes back into the industry.
That's what it's all about.
It's all about giving back.
All right. Now, this is something I've noticed that kind of caught my eye. It's not an amazing article, but it's interesting. Basically, there's going to be super tough coding for cell phones and disks.
Good.
Because Man, I think VHS lasts longer than most DVDs do nowadays with kids handling them and messing around with them and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
You can kick a VHS tape around all you want, you know?
Oh, yeah. You can break most of the stuff off and it still works.
Yeah, that's true. You can break off the little flip tab. And
oh, you can break a lot of it. And it's, you can plug that bad boy still in and, wow, look at that. Good quality picture.
Yeah.
You scratch a DVD, oops.
Yeah, you don't get the quality of image, though, so we're not debating that. But it lasts a little bit longer, I believe. The color LCD screens on cell phones and PDAs can get badly scratched in pocket stuff with those loose change and keys. And CDs and DVDs become unplayable in no time with children to use them as indoor frisbees.
Yay!
Now, a tough transparent polymer coating developed by chemists in Japan is to make scratch phones, screens, and scuffed discs a thing of the past.
Ooh.
In one of the... I like that. We have VR in the background for the crowd reaction. I wish we... Because there's this one show I listen to that has that, and I like it. In one of the most convincing technology demonstrations this reporter has witnessed, I was handed a CD, a wire wool pen, a wire wool pan scourer, and some permanent marker pens,
uh-huh.
and invited to scratch or mark the discs. Hard as I tried, I could not make a single mark on the disc with the scorer.
Oh, my. And you know, I want that on my glasses.
Yeah, and the ink simply wiped off. The only person who has succeeded...
And then you coat the walls with it, and for people with kids, you can coat the walls with it, and crayon and marker just won't stick.
Yeah. Well, crayon might stick because it's just a physical, and you just might kind of like melt it on there, just... You know, it's a...
It'll probably just wipe off anyway.
Yeah. Well,
if permanent marker, which is like chemical bond.
Well, it's easier than like a crayon. Crayon, you can mash that in there, and that's just... Because it rubs off physically.
Yeah.
The only person who succeeded in damaging the disc had undertaken a determined attack with a Swiss Army knife. Probably cut his hand in the process, you know, jabbing at that thing.
Yeah, it might have.
According
I was thinking a hammer, but...
Yeah. The company... that has developed the coding, TDK. 2 years ago, TDK, a maker of tape and disc-based recording media, began developing what was initially a single-layer coating to make DVDs more resistant to being scuffed, but the new coating is far tougher in the transparency, and it is transparent to the full spectrum of visible light rather than just a DVD red laser, so it can also be used to protect the plastic surface of liquid crystal displays.
Yeah. And glasses.
Glasses and...
car windows.
And all sorts of stuff.
My computer monitor. So the whiteout, you know, will actually easily wipe off.
You have whiteout in your computer monitor or what?
Oh, my girlfriend. Yeah, she's a blonde.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
She whited out your computer monitor?
Yeah, she didn't know about the delete button.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was a messy day.
Oh, gosh. All right. Also, moving on to new things here. The you ever seen the movie Real Genius VR? Val Kilmer?
Oh, yeah. Great flick.
Made the laser?
Yeah.
Right? Okay, well, they finally made that idea a reality.
Of the single shot, like 10 megawatt laser?
Yeah, something like that. Basically, it's a Boeing 747.
Yeah.
That has this thing on the front, and it shoots laser beams and takes out ballistic missiles and whatever you want.
Ooh, so it's like Star Wars, but it's like Air Wars.
Yeah, Air Wars. Boeing co-led team has successfully fired the first time a powerful laser meant to fly aboard a modified 747 as part of a U.S. ballistic missile defense shield, officials said. You know, also I saw this program on the Discovery Channel that covered this, actually. The test dubbed First Light by insiders lasted only a fraction of a second, but gave the project an important boost as at a time that it was demanded at risk of cuts or cancellation. Pentagon's Missile Defense Agency described the event carried out on Wednesday, that's earlier this month, in a 747 fuselage on the ground in Edwards Air Force Base in California as a landmark achievement for the airborne laser system. It showed they work, Kenneth Englade, a agent spokesman, said of the laser's six identical pickup truck-sized modules linking to fire as a single unit, the rest is fine-tuning. The chemical oxide iodine laser is built by... No, yeah, that's funny. That kind of reminds me of the movie, too. The oxide laser. Northrop Grumman Corp. It includes breakthrough optics designed to focus a basketball-sized spot of heat on a missile's skin to rupture it up to hundreds of miles away. Or, of course, it could, you know, fry Bin Laden.
That's
like that.
True.
More
the basketball is a little bit bigger than a head, so they actually have some, you know, some range of variance there. They don't have to be precise.
Yeah, boom! This head just disappears.
Gone. Yeah,
gone,
vaporized.
You know, maybe we'll get those little ray guns that they have. Who's the alien guy on Looney Tunes? Little ray guns. Boom.
Oh yeah, Marvin the Martian.
Marvin the Martian. Yeah,
yeah. That's what I'm waiting for. More effective ways.
In coming months, you know, just instead of taking your trash out, just go, doom, just take it.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
And Glade said, engineers hope to boost the duration of the power of the laser's beam. It will then be installed on a 747-400F aircraft for a test that includes shooting down a dummy ballistic missile over the Pacific. No date has been set for that test. Multi-billion-dollar ground-based system for a multi-billion-dollar ground-based system for detecting and destroying missiles fired from a country like North Korea is due to be declared ready for operation by the end of next month. I know they have the Patriot missile defense, but
yeah, but this whole thing sounds a little bit more cost effective.
Yeah, and it's just shoot and miss, okay, go again.
Yeah, they like pew, pew.
Or just just put it all over the sky.
But also think about this: so if it actually has hundreds of miles of range, which it more than likely does, if it's as powerful as they imply it is. You know, like the 747 can, like, fly around South Korea and just pick off targets.
Yeah.
Just, refuel, go around, there goes the nuclear reactor.
I think the main reason they want to put on a plane is to defeat the limitations, to better their options on the limitations of Horizon.
Oh, yeah. Because then they can go, they can get a couple more degrees out of their Horizon.
As they go up in the air. So, yeah, that's, we're working on that Star Wars technology that Reagan started back in the day. That's soon to go up because, of course, all these other people are interested in going to space. And, we got to put our guns up there. So.
Yeah, but we've got to protect our space.
We've got to regulate the...
We own space.
Yeah.
We were the second up there, but we own it because the USSR isn't really around anymore, so they don't own it.
Yeah, and of course, we got the flag up there, all that stuff, so. I don't know, I mean, if it was your country, wouldn't you do it?
Yeah, I still want to own Mars. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, well, we talked about your plan there.
I know, just anybody who's interested in, like, funding it.
Oh, yeah. Come on, that's like $15 in parts, You just get.
Yeah, but I want some investors.
Yeah.
I'm going to have, the Mars Conquest Corporation.
I'll give you I'll pitch in, $5, dude.
All right. I got $5. We need another investor.
Okay. Oh, man.
Oh, no. But actually, what really takes the investment is actually the cargo space on the Brazilian space program. Because that's a little pricey. That's actually where I need the investor in. Or investors, yeah.
Brazilian? You mean like the Russians?
Well, there's a space program that just sends up satellites in South America.
Oh, that, yeah.
And they do an incredibly good job. It's very efficient.
Yeah, they send up those satellites that beam that religious channel all over the world, suck the money out of everyone so they can wear $3,000 suits and drive expensive cars. And have you seen the freaking sets that they have? I mean, geez.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about bling.
Yeah, dude, that's what it's all about. God created the bling bling for the evangelists.
Dude, just getting off on a side subject, they had this guy preaching, and up in the upper right-hand corner, they had a number for amount of calls possible, amount of lines available. And it's jumping up and down. It's like, oh, we got one line open. We got five lines open. Oh, we got one line open now. And
we got that one line open just for you.
Yeah, people are watching call, go. And, it's ridiculous. They have one guy on there.
It's like a TV video interactive game. How many lines can we have filled?
Yeah, they have this guy in there. He's a Indian guy, not Native American, but an Indian guy.
It's probably Benny Hinn.
And he goes,
he's an interesting character.
Right now I'm praying to God, and I'm seeing a person that has a hurt shoulder. You're being healed now. And a person, you can't speak. You haven't been able to speak for many years of your life. You are being healed now. I'm seeing a five-year-old with a problem with his kidney. Kidney, you are being healed now. And I'm like, give me a freaking break.
Yeah,
dude.
Like the five-year-old might not even, what's really funny is,
I mean, come on.
Yeah, like the five-year-old may not even know that they have a problem with the kidney, but he told them they're being healed now.
Yeah, and there's a lady who has breast cancer. You are being healed now in the name of the Lord. Amen. And you know,
and this lady in Missouri jumps up and goes, woohoo, my cancer went into remission.
How can someone get the gall to think that that's what they're doing is working?
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand that. Because you know God's, you know, God's not their, like, monk, you know, like their little pet monkey.
Well, like, they're, you know, that's what's really interesting.
To perform this crap for them?
Yeah, that it's, you know, like, the God is, like, this causal, like, interactive, you know, thing.
Slot when, machine, you
yeah,
know? Put in enough coins, yeah. You might win.
It's God's first, it really, like, if there's a God, that, if it, you know, I go back to, like, Plato's The Uncaused Cause, like, yeah, the first cause, there you go. Everything was absolutely done in that first cause. Beautiful, done. What Benny Hinn says, or his thought of what God is telling him, has no real bearing, no reality.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous. All right, let's get back on track.
It's crazy.
But that was a good thing to bring up. But yeah, I mentioned the satellite thing because they talk about it. We're spreading our word over here to North Africa, and in a few days, this village will be able to see. You know, I'm like, they don't even have any freaking money, and like,
well, they don't have a TV.
Yeah, and your stupid show isn't going to do jack for them. It doesn't.
And
put
if they
food
donate
the
a TV, they don't have any power.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so you have to, you know, hook them up with, you know, a solar cell.
They showed this map of how many countries and stuff they cover. It was like worldwide domination. Like, it's, come on, dude.
It's the new, was it?
World Order?
No. God, what was that? It's the technological crusades for Christianity.
Yeah, it's, jeez.
Like, we won't torture you, we will reprogram you via the cathode ray tube.
Yes. Okay, well.
We'll send little ionized particles towards your direction, which will influence your brainwave patterns, which will make you more acceptable to our idiosyncrasies.
That's pretty sick stuff.
Yay, let me throw money at you.
All right, well, this is, if you don't like Best Buy, then this article's for you. As far as an old adage, the customer is always right goes, Best Buy doesn't buy it. The master retailer is being vocal about something that at first might sound a little frankly, but rather not have 20% of their customers as customers in an age where it seems like everyone casts their nets as wide as possible to bring in more eyes, feet, and wallets. Best Buy is doing the opposite. They believe that a small portion of their customers are bad for business, and they're looking to shut them out. Of course, Best Buy loves their angel customers who buy things regardless of price and load up on high-ticket items.
Oh, yeah. Everybody loves them.
The problem is that the details are about the devils. The devils are its worst customers. They buy products, apply for rebates, bastards.
Oh, my.
Return the purchases, then buy them back at return merchandise discounts.
Oh, yeah.
They load up on lost leaders. Severely discounted merchandise designed to boost store traffic, then flip the goods at a profit on eBay.
Yeah.
They slap down.
That sounds like a multi-million dollar industry just living off of Best Buy.
I know. They slap down rock bottom price quotes from the websites and demand that Best Buy make good on its lowest price pledge. They can wreak enormous economic havoc, said Mr. Anderson. Some see this as Best Buy, and, you know, it doesn't even tell who Mr. Anderson is. Some see that the Best Buy is trying to have its cake and eat it, too. Well, the customers are, actually.
Well, you can have your cake and then eat it, too. It's you can't eat your cake and then have it.
But don't pick your friend's nose, but it's all right. All right, no. But wanting to
get your syntax right.
By wanting to keep rebates, lost leaders, and massive promotions going, but excluding those who make routine use of them. Why not just stop with the marketing games? For Best Buy, it's not quite that cut and dried. While most promotions people abuse are rendered ineffective, when well-educated customers have access to various bargain websites, the majority of Best Buy's customer base is still susceptible to them. Many people will go shopping for a printer that Best Buy may be taking a loss on and end up with extra print cartridges, printer paper, and a service plan to go with it. Those customers aren't going anywhere for a while. While the practice of labeling some customers as devils is by no means new, Best Buy's efforts represent the most concerning exorcism attempt we've seen in a major retailer
that was pretty good.
To date. And it seems to be working. They've changed some of their policies to make them less vulnerable to exploitation, adding a 15% restocking fee and selling restocked goods over the Internet instead of in-store. More notably, they're attempting to explicitly identify desirable customers and appeal to them directly.
Darn. Yeah, you know, like they laid out this whole way that I wouldn't have to work again, and then Best Buy already thwarted it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really pissed.
That sucks.
Yeah, I was going to just, you know, like start buying stuff from Best Buy that have been, you know, returned and selling it on eBay.
Also, there's a small article here. What I'm going to post on here because there's a lot of details here. And it's worth reading. I'll post it under the show notes, and you can take a look at it. But it's basically talking about using Linux and Voice over IP and Asterisk as a popular PBX system to run your company. It's cost effective. Mm. It's good. So I'll check for a link for that. And also, news through the grapevine. Don't hold me to it, but
because it's the word on the street.
It's the word on the street. That on sometime in December, we might be interviewing Kevin Mitnick. So, you know, it's funny, though, as everyone in the world has interviewed Kevin Mitnick, but I don't care because we haven't. So, so we're going to do that possibly in one of the December shows.
There's then that's just one of those things that just really says that the In the Now show has made it to the big time.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, somewhat of the big time, I'd say.
Well, at least the mainstream of this
guy. We got a lot of listeners, you know, and you guys got to post some stuff. Just post anything.
What, like the five? Like, you know,
the five, yeah. Us and two, three others.
Yeah, well, there's Negan Putin.
Output.
Negan Output in Australia. What's the cool guy that's over in Europe?
Europe?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't even know.
I don't remember.
There's quite a few listeners. Actually.
Yeah.
No, we do have a lot of listeners. We do.
Oh, okay. I'll take your word for it.
We do. I've showed you. We have the downloads are, you know.
Yeah, there's like five up there.
No, there's not.
Yeah.
Are you done? Are you done choking a chicken?
Okay. I'm done.
But yeah. So So yeah, there's quite a few downloads. But anyways, yeah. Hopefully we'll have Kevin Mitnick on the show and check out the Mind War. And also, you know, send us some email. Go ahead and post to the forums. Do whatever you like. But, you know, feedback is greatly appreciated. Well, I think that's going to end it for the November 14th edition of the In the Now show.
Right on.
Well, this is your host, Slipmode, signing out. Sorry it's getting up late. But, hey, it's getting there.
This is VR saying, I want to propose a question. Somebody, there's got to be a word for being
suck
nonchalantly spunky. Somebody, you know, post some ideas about what kind of, you know,
zoinks.
What could that word be?
No.
No.
Not zoinks?
No, not zoinks.
Okay.
And not jinkies either.
Jinkies. How about cringy?
No, there's Scooby-Doo Boy.
Okay. All right, well, so we'll see everyone in 2 weeks.
Set off.